This is CBC.
Greetings! Welcome to another exciting episode of Pretentious Internet Theater. I am your host, Andrew Cook, and I am so leet, I win the party to parties that I don't even attend. Last month, Brian Lee O'Malley, creator of the Scott Pilgrim Saga, wrote, Volume 6 is the last Scott Pilgrim book. You'll just have to fanfic the rest. Was that not clear? He wrote this on his Twitter, and I sent the call out to you, the leet listeners, and you answered me at thepitpodcast@gmail.com, and it reminded me of a quote, when the gods wish to punish us, they answer our prayers. That quote was from Oscar Wilde, and these stories are about a young man coming of age in Canada. Enjoy. Pretentious Internet Theater proudly presents Scott Pilgrim vs. Hollywood by Trixie Sticks. It sure was nice of Luke Wilson to give us these movie premiere tickets. A 20-something-year-old with messy brown hair said with a childlike grin. The man was wearing a blue parka that was unzipped. Under the parka you could make out a yellow shirt that had Plumtree written in red text with a crack running along the bottom of said text. He also seemed to be wearing white wristbands, which seemed out of place considering the man's age. He then looked over at the other two individuals he was walking down the street with. One was a woman, the other a man in a striped polo shirt. The man in the striped polo shirt casually added, Scott, how many times do I have to tell you? His name is Lucas Lee. Secondly, he didn't really have a choice considering he exploded into a bunch of coins. And finally, I personally would rather watch paint dry than this so-called movie. You don't have to be such a downer, Wallace, Scott Pilgrim whined with a sad face before continuing. I really want to see it. The girl then spoke up. Scott! It's Explosions and Robots 3! This movie's going to be horrible, just like the first two. The girl's name was Ramona V. Flowers. She had long, dark blue hair that went just past her shoulders. She had a really pretty face and a nice figure. By all accounts, she was way out of Scott's league. But, considering that Scott had defeated her 7 evil exes, he had earned the right to date her. Author's note. If you are confused by all this, then you should stop being a lazy a**hole and find the comic books these characters are in and read them. Ramona then went on to say, Besides, you didn't even like the first two movies. I never said that, Scott exclaimed. Cue flashback. Scott Pilgrim, Wallace Wells, and Ramona all walk out of a theater. On the top of the theater, you can see the words, Robots and Explosions 2. Scott then angrily says, That was such a waste of time. Cue flashback. E-flashback. Scott Pilgrim, Wallace Wells, and Ramona all walk out of the theater. At the top of the theater, you can see the words Robots and Explosions. Scott then angrily says, That was such a waste of time. I'm not even going to respond to that, Wallace said, as he shook his head in astonishment at how dull his friend and former roommate was. But come on, guys! It has robots! And explosions! Scott Pilgrim said in giddy excitement. But Scott, all of Mechanical Bay's movies have robots and explosions in them, Ramona added. Robot Harbor and Robogeddon? Are you seeing a pattern here? Wallace continued, adding to the point Ramona had brought up. I am! Ramona grinned. They all suck! Well, at least it's free, Scott said as he held up the 3 movie tickets. Wallace and Ramona just shrugged as they continued to walk towards their destination.
Meanwhile, in Dimmesdale,
Timmy Turner, laid on his twin side bed, bored out of his mind with nothing to do. This was a surprise, considering he had three magical beings that could grant him anything he desired. Well, almost anything his heart desired. One thing that even magic couldn't give him. Something that everyone desires. Love. Timmy was in love with the most popular girl in all of Dimmesdale. Her name was Trixie Tang. To most people, she was an uptight, cruel, and selfish. But Timmy knew her better than anyone else, for he knew that Trixie had a hidden tomboyish side that she told no one else about. Timmy came across this information on accident by making one of his many wishes to try and win the Asian girl's heart. No matter how hard he tried, it seemed that Trixie Tang's love was always just out of reach. "What's wrong, Timmy?" Cosmo asked Timmy. Cosmo was one of these magical beings, better known as fairy godparents. Cosmo had green hair and eyes. He wasn't the brightest person, to put it gently, but he had a big heart. "I'm just really bored," Timmy answered as he stared at the ceiling. "Well, what do you want to do?" Wanda then asked as she held her child by her hand. "I want to go see Robots and Explosions 3 in Canada," exclaimed Timmy randomly. "Why do you even want to see that movie? I heard the first two were utter abominations to the film industry," Wanda asked in shock. "I don't know," Timmy responded, shaking before continuing. "It's almost like some outside force is controlling my thoughts, making me want to see this horrible movie, but for some lame plot device." "Well, we better keep the story moving along then," Cosmo said as he poofed Timmy to Canada without a second thought. Upon seeing this, Wanda gave Cosmo an evil glare. Cosmo then responded with a simple "What?"
"Back in Canada."
Author's note: you must read this in the most epic voice you can muster up. No. Scott, Wallace, and Ramona are at the movie premiere when they saw a skinny, almost emaciated young man being thrown out of the VIP section. The young man was screaming expletives as he was being thrown out of the theater's lobby. The man had jet black hair. It was short and uncombed. He had tan skin. He was also wearing a painfully ordinary outfit, jeans and a random t-shirt. Scott then went up to the stranger and asked, "What's the matter, man?" The stranger then responded in an irritated tone, not looking at who asked the question. "It's that hack Mechanical Bay. I mean, he's a horrible director. He didn't listen when I told him about how bad Robots and Explosions 3 was. I mean, I didn't waste $100,000 on film school for this hack to tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't even know why he hired me as an advisor. He doesn't listen to advice! Plus, that's not even the worst part. Now, he's going to ruin the comic book I love." "Man, that does totally suck," Ramona responded after the stranger was done ranting. The stranger then looked over and gasped before blurting out, "Oh my God! You're Scott Pilgrim! I've read all the books on your precious little life." Scott then smiled and answered with a chuckle, "Yeah, I'm Scott Pilgrim. I didn't know people actually read those things." The stranger then pointed to two other individuals that stood next to Scott. "And you two are Wallace and Ramona! I can't believe this! I'm such a big fan! Every time I read those books, I get a funny feeling in my pants." "Whoa, too much information, dude," Ramona said in her usual cool and calm voice. "Aw," Wallace moaned. "I found it adorable," Wallace finished as he rubbed the top of the stranger's head. Disclaimer: Wallace Wells is in fact gay. I mean, he's really gay. It's not some stupid fan fiction thing where the writer makes a character gay for no apparent reason. As stated earlier, read the damn books. Scott then asked, "So what's your name, man?" The stranger then pointed at Scott, smiled, and answered, "The name's Mario." Author's note:
he is totally not a Mary Sue.
Author's note:
don't listen to that last note. He totally is a Mary Sue.
Damn.
MOCs.
Well, glad to meet you, man, Scott said as he put his right hand out for Mario to shake. As the young man shook his hand, Scott's eyes wondered something that happened way too often for a man of his age. His eyes caught the weird sight of a 10-year-old boy appearing, seemingly out of nowhere, in a cloud of green smoke. After seeing this, Scott then added in confusion, "Do you guys see that? The kid over there appeared out of nowhere!" "Scott, he's probably just an American in new subspace," Ramona said as he grabbed her easily distracted boyfriend's hand. "Can all Americans use subspace?" Scott then asked. "Pretty much," Ramona shrugged, her and Scott's fingers intertwined. Disclaimer.
If you don't know what subspace is, you can't use subspace!
"Hey, kid," Scott then yelled at the young boy, Timmy, after getting yelled at, then proceeded to look around before pointing at himself and asking, "Who? Me?" Scott then just nodded and motioned for him to come over where they were with the hand Ramona wasn't holding. Timmy then slowly walked over to where the young adults were standing before nervously asking, "Yeah? Hey, man, where are you from?" Scott asked the young buck-toothed boy with a grin. "Dimmesdale, California," the young boy responded uncomfortably. "See, Scott, he is from America. Now leave the poor kid alone. Besides, his big buck teeth are scaring me. It's almost as if there's a beaver in his mouth fighting to get out," Ramona said as she had a look of disgust. She said the last part of that statement. "Do you know I'm standing right in front of you guys?" Timmy said with a look of contempt, but he was really standing right in front of them. "What's your name, little man?" "Mine's Scott's Pilgrim," Scott asked the youngster, as he put his free hand up for Timmy to shake, for Ramona was still holding his other. "Timmy Turner," the boy responded, as he shook Scott's hand, finishing the exchange between the two of them. Mario then broke the seemingly pointless conversation between the two individuals that existed in two completely different fandoms, happened to be meeting for no apparent reason, by telling Scott, "Sorry to interrupt, but my favorite comic book that Mechanical Bay is going to ruin, well, the comic book's about your life, Scott!" Everyone gasped, even Timmy, who should have had no idea on what was going on. Regardless, it was very shocking and disturbing news. Wallace was the first one to speak. "How can he do such a thing? I mean, he is going to ruin Scott's life more than it already is! He must be stopped!" Ramona said dramatically, which was slightly out of character for her. "But how will we get to Mr. Bay? His security is top-notch!" Mario asked, worrying they would not be able to complete the seemingly impossible task. Mario then pointed at the huge security guards that were blocking the VIP area of the movie theater before continuing, "And how are we supposed to get past those guys?" "I've got a plan," Wallace answered with a sly smile. After a poorly executed plan that involved fake mustaches, we next see the gang in the coveted VIP room. The room itself was a gorgeous display of architectural brilliance, with giant beautiful pillars, wondrous archways, and fantastic vaulted ceilings. To be quite honest, it was a little out of place in the small movie theater. Everyone was in wonder, except for Mario. After a few seconds, Ramona took off her fake mustache and asked, "So now what?" "We find the man that's going to ruin my precious little life," Scott said with a look of determination on his face. Timmy was at a loss of words seeing the young adult, for Timmy himself had done amazing things in 11 years of his life. He had saved the world countless number of times. Not once had he just been a bystander. It was an amazing feeling watching someone else do something amazing. It put things into perspective and brought a newfound insight on how important what he was really doing was. As he looked at Scott Pilgrim in amazement, he one day hoped that when he was Scott's age, he would be capable of handling a seemingly impossible task. "Come this way," Mario said as he led the group to Mechanical Bay's privet room. Mario then continued as the group made their way up a flight of stairs. "This isn't going to be easy, guys. Are you sure you can handle it?" "I've handled a lot worse," Scott replied, almost at the top of the stairs. He really has, Wallace agreed. They were now at the top of the stairway. They soon found themselves in front of a door that had a elegant nameplate in the center that read, Mr. Bay. Wallace then asked, Are you guys ready for this?
I was born ready, Scott said confidently.
Scott, you were born 2 weeks late.
That hardly classifies as ready, dude,
Ramona replied, busting Scott's metaphoric bubble.
Let's just get this poorly written story over with, Wallace exclaimed as he opened the door that held the big baddie of this underwhelming one-shot. Mr. Pilgrim!
I've been expecting you, Mechanical Bay said as he laughed evilly.
Wait, how are you expecting us? Ramona said, confused by the whole underdeveloped disgrace of a plot. I'm the one that gave you those tickets to come see this premiere. I mailed you the tickets, but said they were sent by one of your now-deceased evil exes. I just can't believe you were dull enough to fall for it, Mechanical Bay said, as the author tried to make this story somewhat make sense.
Wallace, Ramona, Mario, and even Timmy stared disappointedly at Scott Pilgrim as he defensively replied, What?
Even I'm not dumb enough to fall for that, Timmy exclaimed,
for he, too, had fallen for lackluster evil plans.
At this point, I'm not even surprised anymore, Wallace put his 2 cents in as he rolled his eyes.
I just want to know, why would you invite the only person that could stop you to your movie premiere?
Ramona brought up, ruining what little sense this plot was developing, much to the author's dismay.
To dispose of you so I wouldn't have to hurtle through copyright laws, of course! If I kill Scott Pilgrim, I can simply say that I made the story up by myself, Mechanical Bay laughed, his plan now fully revealed.
Dude, there are like 6 comic books based on his life, Ramona spat back, now visibly mad at how lame this entire plot was.
We both know no one reads those comics, Ramona, Mechanical Bay informed the extremely attractive young adult.
Enough talk. I've come here to defeat you for trying to ruin my precious little life, Scott said as he put his fists up after taking off his dark blue parka. If you want to fight me, you'll have to defeat my 7... Oh, God. If you want to fight me, you first have to defeat my 7 evil ex...
Film teachers! Mechanical Bay yelled victoriously.
7 random, unimportant people stepped out. They were all wearing suits and ties. They all had an imposing figure, even more so because they were all wearing sunglasses. 5 ridiculously awesome, ass-kicking second later, Scott stood coins from the fallen foes dropped to the ground like water on a rainy day. The only thing Scott said after that was, "That all you got?" A smirk plastered on his face.
Whoa! Was the only sound Timmy could exhale from his mouth. Timmy, for the first time in his life, had seen an adult worth idolizing. It was an amazing feeling, knowing that all adults weren't as lame as they were in Dimmesdale.
Timmy then looked over to Wallace and said, Does this stuff happen all the time?
You really need to come to Canada more, kid, Wallace simply answered as he took a sip from a coffee cup he had gotten out of nowhere.
Wallace then continued with a smile. It's just getting good. Mechanical Bay had a look of shock on his face as he said,
What? That plan went better in my head.
In any case, there's still Plan B, Mechanical Bay then clapped his hands together before continuing. I forgot to mention who I was going to have play you in the movie adaptation, Ramona.
Mr. Bay finished with an evil grin.
Who? Ramona asked, honestly wanting to know.
Megan Cox,
he answered, as no other than Megan Cox walked into the room. She looked exactly like Megan Fox, almost as if this Cox version was a parody of her.
You monster! Ramona shouted before continuing, She is the worst actress in the world! I mean, the robots had more personality than her in Robots and Explosions movies!
Well, if you have a problem with it, just try and stop us! Mechanical Bay spat out at Ramona.
Gladly,
Scott answered for his girlfriend. What makes you think you can stop us? Megan Cox said with no emotion. Author's note.
Damn, this chick can't even act in book form.
Easy, Scott said, before he and Ramona stood side by side equipping themselves with the trademark weapons. Scott pulling his flaming katana out of his chest. Ramona pulled out a giant hammer from her subspace bag. Scott then finished his thought by saying, We have the power of love. When me and Ramona are together, no force in the universe can stop us. As Scott finished that last statement, he had a look of determination as he pointed the flaming katana at Mechanical Bay. He's right. For once, Ramona said with a slight smile beside Scott, hammer in hand. We'll just see about that, Bay said with a scowl before grabbing a remote and pressing a button. A suit of armor then enveloped his entire body, except for his face. He then smiled at the two young lovers. Megan Fox then pulled out a katana of her own, before motioning to Ramona and saying, Bring it! Unfortunately, she once again had no emotion when saying the statement, causing the heroes to moan in pain from her bad acting. Obliging Megan Cox's taunt, Ramona rushed forward. Moved rather quickly, considering how big the hammer she was holding was. Scott soon followed, rushing toward Mechanical Bay and his poor man's Iron Man armor. Ramona was first to reach her target as she took a swing at Mrs. Cox, who blocked it with her katana. Ramona then grinned and said to her, Well, at least you can fight better than you can act! Megan had nothing to say, mostly because she couldn't think on her feet. Author's note.
A skill that really good actresses have.
So instead, she just took a swing at Ramona's midsection, a move that Ramona easily dodged by jumping backwards. After dodging the attack, Ramona then took a swing of her own. Over on the other side of the room, Scott had finally made it to where Mr. Bay was standing. He then jumped up and swung his flaming katana down at the evil Mr. Bay, who had seemed to block it with his arm. Disclaimer.
Maybe I was wrong. This armor is legit!
Mr. Bay then just cockily said, Is that all you got? That last statement irritated Scott. Though he didn't have a comeback to it, author's note.
He was notoriously bad at giving comebacks. One last time, read the books!
So instead, he just took another swing at this hack they call the director. Meanwhile, Ramona seemed to have her hands full fighting Megan Cox. Megan seemed to be a better fighter than she looked. The two females kept trading blows, though none were landing, except for on each other's weapons, making a loud clinging noise as they did. As a matter of fact, the noises were so loud... How loud were they? That they were making text versions of themselves appear, which meant every time Ramona's hammer and Megan's katana met, bing, crack, and whap were visibly coming off of the weapons as they met. This is amazing! Timmy exclaimed as he watched the two lovers fight the forces of evil side by side. Wallace then put his hand on Timmy and informed him that it's almost over, though. Wallace was right, because not even a second after saying that, his last statement, Ramona gave a devastating shot to the head, causing the under-talented young actress's head to fly across the room. To the surprise of everyone, though, she didn't turn into a bunch of coins. Upon further investigation, it was discovered she didn't turn into coins because she was a robot. Ramona then smiled and said, Well, at least we know why she sucks at acting! The robot then shot sparks out of its neck before falling over. Scott then swept, kicked Mr. Bay, causing him to fall onto his back. Scott then pointed the flaming katana at Mr. Bay's only weak point, his face, which was not covered by the armor suit. Any last words? Scott asked the evil director. No, but I will do this. Mechanical Bay laughed as he clapped his hands again. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, another Megan Cox robot appeared and had Ramona at knife point. The robot had a katana held up against Ramona's neck. Mechanical Bay then laughed and said, So, who's it gonna be, Me, or your precious little girlfriend? Oh, no, Timmy said before looking over at Wallace and asking, what's going to happen? Timmy was nervous, for even though he'd only spent a few hours with Scott and his friends, he had grown a deep bond with the young adults. I don't know, Wallace simply answered, a worried look on his face. No one has used Ramona like this. He honestly didn't know what Scott was going to do. Scott then threw his sword down at Mr. Bay's feet and answered the madman. Fine, you win. Kill me. Just leave Ramona alone. No, Ramona sadly said to herself before yelling at Scott. Scott, don't do it! I'm not worth it. Tears flowing down her young, attractive face at the thought of Scott dying just to save her. Don't be silly, Ramona. I'd do anything for you. Scott answered, dropping down to his knees. Scott then began glowing as light outlined every inch of his body. Timmy, with a look of shock on his face at what he was seeing, then asked Wallace, why is he glowing? I think he's leveling up, Wallace answered the boy, a worried look still on his face. Leveling up? Timmy asked, confused by the answer. Wallace then turned to Timmy and explained the situation. Well, you see, Scott had the ability to become stronger, faster, intelligent, and willful. Wallace then looked back over to Scott before continuing. The flaming katana, for instance. Scott obtained that sword when he first told Ramona he loved her. I'm guessing that now he's willing to give his life in exchange for hers. He has leveled up again. So, do you think he is strong enough to stop Mechanical Bay? Timmy then asked, starting to understand what was going on. I don't know, Wallace answered, not even looking at the boy. Mechanical Bay then stood up, laughing evilly. As he dusted himself off, he ordered the other Megan Cox robot to kill her anyway. No! Scott screamed as he barrel-rolled over to his sword. Scott quickly grabbed the sword. He could see other Megan Cox robot pull back the katana she was holding, ready to decapitate Ramona. Throwing the sword he had just reacquired in a desperation attempt to stop the robot, the sword flew through the air for what seemed like forever. The sword finally made contact with the other Megan Cox's robotic head, stopping the robot mid-swing. Scott then breathed a sigh of relief, knowing now that the girl he loved was safe. He then turned his attention to Mechanical Bay. Mechanical Bay then put his hands up defensively before asking, there isn't going to be a way to make you forget this whole thing, is there? Scott didn't even answer the evil director as a sword handle slowly protruded from his chest. Scott then slowly pulled the weapon out from his chest. This new flaming katana was longer than the last. His new love-powered sword even had a gold blade, and the flames were now a slight pink color. Scott then swung the sword at Mechanical Bay, slicing him in half. Even though he was still wearing his armor, coins flew everywhere as the sword made contact with the now defeated director. Scott then ran over to Ramona, who was still on her knees. Dropping to his knees, he then grabbed her hands, looked into her eyes, and said, I love you, Ramona. I'd never let anything bad happen to you. Oh, Scott, Ramona responded, face still wet from crying, before leaning in and giving her boyfriend a loving and passionate kiss. Timmy then turned to Wallace with a smile and said, that was definitely the coolest thing I had ever seen! You really need to come to Cannon the Moor, kid. Wallace chuckled as the group then walked towards the two lovers. Timmy was the first to talk to Scott, who was now standing and holding Ramona's hand. Man, that was amazing! I hope one day I could do something half as awesome as what I just saw. Well, I'm sure one day when you have this, you'll do something amazing too, kid, Scott answered Timmy. What, his hand on my boob? Ramona asked with a smile, for in fact, Scott's hand was totally on her left boob. Scott, frowning, then took his hand off his girlfriend's boob and whined, why does that always happen? Wallace finally explained to Timmy, I think what Scott's trying to tell you is that one day you will find someone you love. You will be able to accomplish things you didn't even think were possible. What if I'm not strong enough? What if I fail them? Timmy asked nervously, fearing that when the time came, he wouldn't be ready. You'll be surprised how strong you become when you truly love someone, Wallace answered, confronting Timmy. Timmy then just nodded at the answer. So now, who's going to make the movie about my life? Scott asked Mario, who was silent up to this point. Mario then smiled and answered, We'll find someone worthy. Author's note. Edgar Wright! Go see Scott Pilgrim V! S the World! August 13th! Declaimer! Please note, release date may vary depending on country. So now what do you want to do? Ramona asked Scott before kissing him on the cheek. I know, Scott exclaimed. Scott Pilgrim, Wallace Wells, Ramona, and Timmy all walk out of a theater. On the top of the theater, you can see the words, Robot and Explosions 3. Scott then angrily says, That was such a waste of time. Author's note.
Much like this story.
Author's note.
Well, E350, I hope you enjoyed my contest entry. I might even reference it in the League of Super Awesome Teenagers. I hope it wasn't too confusing. I suggest reading the Scott Pilgrim books. They're legit!
Well, that was certainly an interesting crossover. I particularly enjoyed how the author took the time to insert a character from a separate universe, namely Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents. Being us, the outsider, trying to understand Scott Pilgrim's world. Although, it is along those lines that I'd like to point out a slight correction to the author. First of all, a lot of people do read the Scott Pilgrim comic books. I do. But also, the sixth volume of Scott Pilgrim, known as Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour, managed to outsell the book Breaking Dawn by Stephanie Meyer. You might have heard of her. She wrote that Twilight series. The movie, on the other hand, perhaps it would have been directed by Michael Bay. It would have maybe made more than $18 million in its opening weekend. I saw the movie. That's how leet I am. I saw Scott Pilgrim opening weekend and paid my money to do so. I didn't watch it for free like a lot of you plebeian freeloaders. No. I paid good money to see some leet action on the screen. Let's get on with our next story. Pretentious Internet Theater proudly presents The Extremely Epic Life of Scott Pilgrim by Gem on Toast X3. One day, in Toronto, Scott Pilgrim was walking down the street with his new girlfriend, Knives Chow. Scott, do you think Tata I am kawaii? She batered her eyes. He looked at her blankly. Knives, there is something I need to tell you. What I it? Her eyes witted. I am in love with Romano Flores, he squealed, as he stared at the grill, who was scatting on the other side of the road. Romano, at least that's what it said on her name tag. Hand, short pink hair, the 4 inches on snow that lined the sidewalk, melted beneath her as she skated. For Romana was a mass star of subspace and physics. Knives rolled out of the way of the incoming to Griff. Scort hated accidentally hit her into the road when he squealed. And starred at him with disappointment and ate. For the girl called Romana. As soon as Scotter got back from his date with Nives, he ordered some manga from. If I order some manga from Amazon, then she'll have to deliver this to me. This plane is foolproof, he thought. And so he ordered some volumes of Naruto, because it is his favorite manga series. 2 days later, she delivered the package to his house. Package for a pilgrim? She looked confused at the guy painting in front of her. That's me, he pantered. Sanir, she pointed at the signature box. Will you go out with me? Only is you, sigh. Okay, so Mono, and Scott went for a date at the Susie Palace. Afterwards, she admits that he would have to fight her 7 evil exes. So, Scott Pilgrim had to face the spin evil exes of Romano Floors, that where he could bear his children, that would be called Dvid and Elid. Author's note.
You guys like fanfic? I will make Squeal, starring their children!
1 week later, when Scott Pilgrim's band Sex Baboom was playing at the venue, a man with a side fringe burst into the room.
To Mr. Pilgrim, I am Romana's first evil ex, Metu Patali, pre-rear to die!
He launched a puntunch through the air at Scott. Scort slowly moved fast out of the way.
We're fighting over Romano? Didn't you get the Mentos?
Matthew looked confusedly at him.
I skimmed it. In Pafel's rage, he summoned an army of evil hipster chicks, who were shallow to hedgehog t-shirts because they're dark like that.
Scott and his friends, Kim, Steve B, his sister Ict, stood together and started to chant, and Matthew Patel and his hipster demands burst into a pile of coins. In the following weeks and months, Scort faced Rarmon's other evil exes. He even had to fight Charles' father, who was angry at Scort because he had dishonored his family and his daughter. He started to shout Chinese at Scott.
Chinaman, I not understand Chinese, eh?
He said, flabbergasted.
After he had defeated her final evil ex, Gridiron Gordian, Graves, they lived happily ever after.
Author's note.
I haven't read the final book yet,
R, until Triple G's latest girlfriend, Ursula, Urchila, came out of nowhere with a chopstick nunchucks and a kendo sword. Scort and Romana froze to the spot.
The end?
I'd like to bring you into the next phase of internet fan fiction. Oh yes, I can go to fanfiction.net and pull any number of Scott Pilgrim stories, and perhaps we'll do this again. But this particular group which was sent in caught my attention. It takes internet fan fiction into the next century, which would be this century, because everyone else who writes fan fiction is doing it in the 20th century method. This would be the 21st century method.
An intrepid band of young fanficers set out to write stories which are interactive tales. I present to you selected stories from Scott Pilgrim versus the Internet.
Pretentious Internet Theater proudly presents Time to Vegan, a Scott and Todd story.
Scott hadn't left Pacific Mall yet. He's hungry, dammit, and they've got one of the best food courts around. Scott browses the court for the right food to hit the spot. He begins losing hope when he spots Taco Del Loco, the manliest Mexican food around. And he strolls up to the counter. He views the menu. The Tiny Timmy Taco. Beef and cheese, the basic of all tacos. The Hombre, burrito with beef, cheese, and lettuce. Nacho Libre, nachos, duh. Fiesta in your face, chicken, cheese, lettuce, guacamole, and salsa, etc., etc., etc. Scott sighs. It's all pretty basic, and he turns to leave. As he's turning away, something catches his eye. On the placemat menu in front of the register, there's a menu item hidden by the bean sauce. There's something about it that Scott can't resist. An aura. A calling. He returns to the counter and rubs away the bean sauce, and there, beheld in front of him, is the greatest food item ever. The Quetzalcoatl. A hefty burrito made with beef,
veal, pork, chicken, turducken carvings, and goat. 5 kinds of cheese, guacamole, salsa, and sour cream. Non-fair trade. Beans, rice, potato, and bio-engineered super corn. Now even cornea. Tomatoes, lettuce, onions, chives, 2. Totally not free-range. Eggs. Wrapped up in 3 different kinds of burrito shell, cheese between each layer, the god burrito. Scott's eyes glaze over. He's drooling like crazy. The teen behind the counter shouts into the back with a crackling voice, Susan, grab the slobber mat! Another unemployed slacker loser spotted the Quetzalcoatl again. Scott's stomach rumbles, bringing him back to attention. I want, Scott says in a very rudimentary fashion, pointing at the option with a slack-jawed look on his face. Okay, sir, but I'll have to warn you, as instructed by the Vegan Academy, that this food option is against the laws of nature, and eating it will cause a vegan somewhere to go blind, the server informs him dryly. Scott's grin magically grows larger. It's not even part of his face anymore. That makes it even better. I'll take 2. Scott pays for his monstrosity, and the server informs him that it will take a while to prepare. Scott gives him a double thumbs up and waits in anticipation for the food to arrive. As Scott stands at the counter, an ominous and rather large shadow looms in from behind him. Before you eat 2 of those horrible monstrosities, I'll let you know that I won't be the one going blind. Even if they do make vegans go blind at all. I was the top student at Vegan Academy, Todd says, once again proving that Vegan Academy doesn't actually have good academic standards. You'll have to get rid of all the lesser vegans before you get to me. Todd doesn't seem to be too concerned with Scott's presence at the moment. For one thing, he isn't even trying to beat the crap out of him like he normally would be doing. There's a trail of broken glass and overturned chairs behind him, though, so Todd's clearly in a pretty lousy mood. 1 veggie burrito, please, Todd says. We don't have the veggie burrito, the clerk says. Then give me an hombre with no beef and no cheese, Todd says, glaring at him. You want a burrito with just lettuce? Yes. The clerk shrugs and gets to making it. So, Pilgrim, how's life without Ramona, he says, the smug tone in his voice masking the fact that he'd just been dumped. And hard. Scott was incredible shocked to see Todd at first, but he quickly got over. He had to begun to accept that this was going to be a common occurrence in his everyday life. You cocky cock, you'll pay for you crimes against whom I... Scott stopped mid-sentence. As he considered the ungodly, very godly delicacy he was about to indulge in, recalling Lucas's non-hostile confrontation earlier, and seeing how Todd wasn't beating his head in, he decided to see where talking would go. Life without Ramona sucks. You should know that. Or did you forget she dumped your ass, too? Scott wasn't bitter. Oh, God, the bitterness was dripping off his words. What do you want, Todd? Or did you just come for the dough-wrapped lettuce? I'll have you know that dough-wrapped lettuce is delicious, Todd says. And no, it really isn't, but this stupid place had no vegan options. But no, I came here because, unfortunately, at this time, you were the only one that can understand my predicament. Don't think I'm starting to associate with lowlifes like you on a regular basis, but this is a... special case. He takes a bit of his lettuce-only burrito. Yum, yum. Envy Adams is an unbelievable bitch who led me on and even got me to do unselfish things for her. He cringes at the word unselfish, as if it's some horrible sin. And then she dumped me, and she laughed about it. It still made him feel kind of bad to talk about her like that. Stupid emotions. So you see, Scott, we have something in common now. Scott was listening along to Todd word for word. Nothing better to do while waiting for his food. Dough lettuce, yum, you have fun with that. When Todd explained that Scott was the only one who could understand his predicament, Scott became intrigued. Oh God, was this gossiping? It totally was. Scott sighed and relented to listening to Todd. Lowlifes like me, got it. God, this guy was an asshat. He watches Todd take a bite of his vegan burrito.
Even though it's just a wrap in lettuce, Scott's stomach rumbles. How did this asswad get served before him? Were they butchering the meat fresh in the back? A loud thunk and slicing noise made him regret his question. Envy Adam is an unbelievable bitch. That line made him perk up. He'd heard it a lot from his friend, but never would have expected it from Todd. She's a special kind of bitch, ain't she? Scott slumped on the counter. At least it wasn't just Scott she was a bitch to. What did she make you do before tearing out your heart? Well, she made me... Todd pauses. He can't exactly tell Scott about his contract with Gideon without giving away his whole plan. You know, she just pretended to like me and stuff before throwing me out in her life like I was some no-name loser. He sighs, finishing up his veggie burrito. Of course yours is taking longer, Scott. There's 100 different ingredients on that thing. She's a special kind of bitch, yeah. Todd has always known that. But she was his special kind of bitch. Besides, it was kind of hot when she was bitchy towards other people. When they were bitchy towards other people together, he just never expected her wrath to be directed at him. She left me, he said, slumping over as if he was just punched in the stomach. She left me for Gideon. The hair on the back of Scott's neck raised up. Gideon, that weaselly son of a bitch! Scott knew what it was like to have Envy leave you. She ripped out as much of you as she could before she left. What a bitch. Scott also knew what it was like having a girl leave him for Gideon. The rage involved in that was intangible. Scott kept having this reoccurring dream. Ramona and Envy sharing a king-size bed. Every time the dream started, he always forgot the ending, enjoying the scene until the second Gideon walks in, and he remembers. The girl he loves is Gideon's now. That overbearing f**k of a f**k! Scott shouts in the middle of the food court, hands clenched in front of him. Scott wants to break something again. He turns around to find something to break, only to be reminded that Todd trashed everything on his way over. Hey, Scott takes a moment. If you did all that, you have your vegan powers back. Why not squash Gideon into bastard paste? Gideon's tougher than he looks, Scott. Besides, he's not such a bad guy, Todd says. He signed me to a really great contract. He promised me all the fame I'd had in Clash in Demon's Head and more. And, well, I could probably squash him, even if he is pretty tough. But that wouldn't be very nice. He was the one who gave me my vegan powers back, after all. In truth, Todd was pretty pissed off at Gideon right now, and would have no problem beating him up. But he still wanted something Gideon had to offer, so he'd put up with the Scott loser a bit longer. What better way to get back at your ex than to get ridiculously famous and popular by the same guy she left you for? Ramona did choose him over you, didn't she? He says. Now listen, normally I'd never help out someone like you, but I think I can kind of relate to you now. I overheard Gideon talking in private. He says he really hates to admit it, but he likes your style. He said even though it would be humiliating for him, he's a good businessman and can't refuse such talents on the basis of a personal disagreement, Todd says, trying to make it look as appealing as possible. What I'm saying is, he has a deal for you. Todd's comment about Gideon not being such a bad guy made Scott's face implode. He turned back to the counter. For a few moments, his mind managed to go blank, only to be interrupted again and again by Gideon showing up. He'd stand there smirking and giving Scott the whole, hey there, buddy thing that he does. Every time, Scott would just shut him out. He'd try to listen to Todd, but every time he'd drift back into the blank, and Gideon would keep getting bigger and more intrusive. Eventually, Scott's mind just shut off, like an older model TV, with a flicker in the light taking a few moments to fade. Scott's mind came rushing back as Todd continued. Scott stood intently listening, taking everything Todd said, piece by piece. Gideon's tough. Not a bad guy, bull. Contract? Making Todd famous again. Todd could squash. Gideon gave back vegan powers. Can he do that? Getting back at exes. Ramona did choose... him, Twitch, only half listening now. We're related? Gideon talking to his privates? Ashamed about talking to his privates. Think Scott's a snappy dresser? Gideon's totally humiliated and he's not as awesome as Scott? Something, he has a deal for you? That last part struck out like a sore thumb. What the hell could Gideon possibly want with Scott? Well, it didn't matter anyways. There's nothing Gideon can offer me that would make dealing with him worth it, Scott replied coldly. Well, it's not like I care about what you do, but if you want to pass this up, it's nothing to me. Just thought I'd help out someone in a similar situation to me. I have to do at least one nice thing in my life. Too bad, though. With Gideon's help, you could make it big, and maybe Ramona would see what a catch you were. Come running back to you and all that. Then you could ditch Gideon. Truth is, I'd rather see Ramona with you than with him, he says. That wasn't totally a lie. Todd hates Scott for headbutting him so hard he burst. But he's not so big on Gideon right now, considering he stole his girl. Then again, if Gideon got Ramona back, he'd dump Envy, and that'd be an ideal situation. But Todd wasn't going to tell Scott that. With Gideon's help, you can make it big. What the hell was Todd talking about? Sex bomb? That had kind of just dissolved. It wasn't like Scott was going to do that on his own. Don't get him wrong, he loved that band, but it was really more Stephen Stills thing. Scott was getting tired of this crap, and his burritos hadn't arrived yet. He was getting grumpy. What the crap are you talking about, Todd? I'm not a famous musician. I don't want to be. I never planned to be either. I'm in a band because it's fun, not to be famous. So all Gideon has to offer is so-called fame. You can tell it to stick it up his... Order up, the Wheezy Teen announced. Well, half order. We're still working on the other one. Finally, Scott thought to himself. This whole Gideon Todd thing was getting to Scott. He hated the guy enough already. He didn't want to think about being any more involved with him than he was already. Scott took a big bite of his delicious monstrosity. Ash. The bitter taste that talking about Gideon left in his mouth made his burrito taste like ash. Scott hung his head in self-pity and disgust. He had lost his appetite. Great, this day can't get any worse. Scott looks over to Todd. Is there anything else you want, or you want to continue ruining my day? Okay, the talk of fame didn't work. What can this idiot be bribed by? Todd was determined to get something out of this meeting. He didn't talk to this loser in public and watch him eat his disgusting burrito for nothing. I'm not here to ruin your day, man. Just saying, we have a lot in common now. My deal with Gideon worked out well for me, he says, gesturing to his psychic-induced destruction behind him. He didn't actually think they had anything in common besides being dumped by the same two girls. Other than that, they were polar opposites. But he had to play it up for now. It can't hurt to take a look at Gideon's offer. I mean, you can always say no. He gets really frustrated when people say no to him. You could mess up his day, you know, if you waste his time when he explains the deal to you and you say no. You pass up the opportunity to ruin Gideon's day, he says, desperate to find something this loser wants. Scott was still grumbling, as Todd continued trying to convince him to go see Gideon. Can you pass up an opportunity to ruin Gideon's day? Scott perked up immediately when he heard this. If nothing else, it would be worth it just to piss off Gideon. That smug son of a bitch. Second order up, the teen croaked. Scott pulls off his signature stance, burrito in one hand, pointing at the cashier with the other. Make it to go, Scott chimed enthusiastically. His appetite renewed. He scarfed down the rest of his first burrito. Mmm, super food, delicious, 100 XP. The words took a minute to float through the air before disappearing into puffs of smoke. Let's do this, Scott shouted with gusto, gripping his wrapped burrito in front of him. Take me to Gideon. And now, a last tale. Betrayed? Maybe. Scott had to get away from his local neighborhood. His friends were getting sick of his whining, and his enemies seemed to be returning, and in far greater numbers than he wanted to deal with right now. He went down to the Pacific Mall to get lost in the crowds and the mall's general shopping frenzy. He wandered through the mall and browsed many of the stores, busy noticing what he was looking at times. Going store to store without any intention of buying anything, just passing time. It was only when he realized that he'd wandered into a ladies' lingerie store that he realized maybe he needed to pay a little attention to what he was doing. Finally, settling for sitting on one of the mall benches, staring off into nothingness. Scott was still having trouble getting his mind of Ramona. He kept thinking he saw her. Every punky jacket, every girl with dyed hair. For a split second, each one was her. Soon, it seemed every face he saw was someone he knew. The gay guy at the liquor store was Wallace. The scruffy guy at the record store was Stephen Stills. The unamused redhead behind the counter of Quiznos was Kim. There was an entire gaggle of giggle knife chows. I kept walking through the mall. Scott almost threw his shoe at the damn dirty hipster he thought was Gideon. He settled for just shouting, "Hip-sitter!" at him instead. There was a Julie staring at him from inside an HMV. Okay, that might actually be Julie. She works like everywhere. Scott ducked down a bit, just in case. There was a couple strolling through the mall, arm in arm. The girl looked like Stacy, and the guy looked like Lucas Lee. Scott chuckled at the craziness of that idea. Stacy and Lucas. Ha! Scott leaned a little closer. That girl looked a lot like Stacy. Too much like Stacy. Oh, crap, it was Stacy. When did she get a boyfriend? When did she get a boyfriend who looked like Lucas Lee? A lot like Lucas Lee. Too much like Lucas Lee. Well, it was Lucas Lee. Stacy! Scott shouts in surprise. The original plan for the day had been to find Lucas, dump his evil ass in a glorious and epic speech, but it hadn't ended that way. But Stacy wasn't really all that disappointed. Maybe she'd lost her nerve with the epic speech thing. She'd scored pretty big anyways. Totally not gay, famous boyfriend. Stacy figured she deserved this after so many of her exes had gone home with Wallace. Ha ha! Take that, gay boy. Or don't in this case. So after celebrating the relationship on the couch, Lucas had decided to take her out. Okay, not entirely true. First they'd fooled around for about 3 more hours. Stacy would probably be bragging to Wallace about this later. And then anyone else she could find that would listen. Street boyfriends. They were great. Stacy's head snaps around, suddenly hearing her name. But it wasn't anyone saying her name. It was that desperate, oh my god, I lost my wallet, please comp me on this coffee tone. Scott, she shouts back, equally surprised. Her immediate reaction is to grab Lucas and shove him into one of those large ferns that decorate the mall. She'd brag to almost anyone about dating Lucas, but not her brother. Yay! What are you doing here? She said in a frighteningly sweet voice.
It was all very new for Lucas. The truth, it was after Ramona left him for Toddy Vegan Simovich. Kind of stopped trying the whole relationship thing. It had pretty much been one girl after another. Lots and lots of one-night stands. And a few famous names. But nothing ever this normal. Stacy and him on the couch kind of rocked his world. He was having feelings for her. Real feelings. He didn't know what to do. So he told him to shut the set down for the day. He had taken Stacy to the Pacific Mall to get away from prying eyes. He was happy. Just kind of wanting to keep her to himself. He wanted to buy her things. He wasn't sure how else to show his affection. 1 minute was happily strolling along with Stacy through the mall. The next thing, he knew he was in a fern. Who was she talking to?
Scott couldn't believe it. It was Stacy. And it was Lucas Lee. Maybe? There had to be an explanation for this. I came to the mall to get away from all the crazy... The crazy that is my life! Scott was near hysterical. Was this a bad dream? It had to be. Maybe? If it was all a bad dream, what did it all mean? Suddenly it hit him. Ooh! Scott breathed a sigh of relief. You're dating one of the stunt doubles! Scott seemed pleased with his deduction. I mean, that had to be it. Right? Stacy leans against the potted plant, smiling and looking casual. Her face falls flat at Scott's accusation. What? She wasn't good enough for the real Lucas? Damn it, she had an average hotness score of 8.5 according to those doubles. Of course she was good enough. No, she shouts, almost slapping her brother, but instead choosing to wag a finger in his face. I'm here with my totally not a stunt double boyfriend, she says carefully, not sure if she wanted to admit to her brother she's now dating one of his 7 mortal enemies.
Lucas strides out of the fern. He looks Scott dead in the eye. Once again, breaking out the action hero gruff voice. Scott Pilgrim.
Scott readies himself into a fighting stance. Staring at Lucas, he returns with Lucas Lee.
Pilgrim.
Lee? Jesus. Stacy palms her forehead. Were these two idiots really going to get into it now? Well, not if she had anything to do with it. Stacy steps forward between the two, holding her hands palm out towards either of them. Simmer down, boys. No one's... She stops, turning her head to Scott, who's still not quite done with the lone E sound in Lucas Lee. Scott, shut the hell up! She gives him a light slap on the cheek, trying to bring him out of his trance. Yes, I'm dating Lucas, so while I'm around, I forbid you from fighting. She looks over her shoulder at Lucas. That goes for you, too. Lucas is still glaring at Scott. He'd barely heard a word she said. Right now... Oh, wait. I should read that as Lucas.
Lucas is still staring at Scott. He has barely heard a word she said. Right now, he only has one thing on his mind. He walks past Stacy straight to Scott and points a finger in his face. Listen, I don't like you and you don't like me. But I really like your sister. He says, gesturing back to Stacy, just to state the obvious about who he's talking about. So here's my deal, Pilgrim. He says, leaning close to look Scott right in the eye. We have serious business to deal with, us two. Lucas, once again, needless gesture to who he's talking about. But right now, I'm going to continue my... He looks to Stacy for the right word. Date. Hanging out. Thing. With your sister. He shrugs content with his description. Whipping his attention back to Scott, he continues. So I didn't see you.
Scott didn't enjoy the swat to the face, but it made him stop. Standing there sheepishly, he leaps back into a fighting stance as Lucas approaches. Scott was expecting a fight, not a talk. So he kind of sits there with his fist raised, hearing Lucas out. The two of us. Scott quietly corrects under his breath. Scott didn't come to the mall today, looking for a fight. Seemed perfectly reasonable to leave without one, too. Relaxing out of his stance a little, Scott relents. Okay, fine. We won't do this whole thing today. But next time, we'll see. I guess. I think. They both stand for a minute, sharing an awkward silence. Scott, final breaks. So, can I have your autograph? Stacy sighs, letting her arms drop to her side as she gets completely ignored. This is not how she envisioned the rest of the day at all. She grumbled, letting the two finish off their little pissing match. Great. Are we good now? Because I was promised frozen yogurt and I've yet to have any. Stacy raises an eyebrow at the two boys, raising her arms as she shrugs. So can we just go? Her head once again snaps to Scott, who has chosen the worst time to ask a stupid question. No! No, you cannot! We're going and you can't come! She grabs Lucas's arm, sticks her tongue out at Scott. She's going to finish her date without any more weird interruptions.
Lucas has gotten out his pen and was ready to sign his autograph when Stacy interrupted. He bashfully puts the pen away. Him and Scott both content with the arrangement. And so, they part ways. As they're leaving, Scott turns around and inquires one more thing. Lucas, do you have change for the bus? Lucas turns around, shocked and dismayed. Bus, what the hell do you take me for? Scott scuffs his foot. So no, because I thought you were this big, rich actor guy. Guess I was wrong. Lucas totally takes the bait. I have tons of cash, you little runt. See? Here. Lucas hands Scott a Canadian 50. How's that for bus money, you jump? As Scott takes the money, he gets sparkles in his eyes. Woo, wow. Lucas scoffs and turns to leave, but Scott grabs his arm before he departs. One last thing, Lucas. Scott leans close to make his point clear. You hurt my little sister. I'll turn you into pennies. The fire in Scott's eyes was unmistakable. His words were dead serious. Lucas had a blank expression on his face as Scott relayed this to him. There was something real damn admirable about what Scott said. Lucas grinned. Maybe the kid was more of a hero than Lucas originally realized. I'll keep it in mind. And with that, they headed in separate directions. Once they were out of earshot, Lucas turned to Stacy. Ha, I totally gave your brother the pink bill. He accepted gay money. Lucas was very smug and content with his little victory.
And thus concludes our stories. One thing I will say about the interactive Scott Pilgrim fan fiction which you may participate in, the link of course will be on the main website, which is tinyurl.com/pitpodcast. Which by going there you're even more elite than those listeners who go on iTunes because they have to wait an extra day. I digress. One thing that just seemed to miss the mark was that no one at this time is playing young Neil. 'Tis but a pity. Knowing that someone portraying young Neil, perhaps it would be the second happiest day in young Neil's life. Ponder that, won't you?
Until next time, and as always, this is Andrew Cook, reminding you that there is much drama on the internet, but only the best makes pretentious internet theater. Good night. Pleasure. It's all yours.